The body of the old abbot was dressed in a green coat and a pointy red hat. His long white beard was carefully combed out, and then he lay peacefully on his bed as Gerda read the service. "Now that it has pleased you, Arnold Brothers, Est 1905, to take our brother to your great gardening department beyond consumer accounts, we will give him the gifts a gnome must take on his journey." The Count de Ironmongery stepped forward. "I give him," he said, laying an object beside the gnome, "the spade of honest toil." "And I," said the Duke de Haberdashery, "lay beside him the fishing rod of hope." Other leading gnomes brought other things. The wheelbarrow of leadership, the shopping basket of life. Dying in the store was quite complicated, Masklin gathered. Grimmer blew her nose as Gerda completed the service and the body was ceremoniously carried away to the sub-basement, they later learned, and the incinerator, down in the realms of prices slashed, the security, where he sat at night times, legend said, and drank his horrible tea. Gerda was going to be the new abbot. The old abbot had left strict instructions. "Why me? I never wanted to lead anyone. Anyway, you know," he lowered his voice, "I have doubts sometimes. The old abbot knew it, I'm sure. I can't imagine why he'd think I'd be any good." Masklin said nothing. It occurred to him that the abbot might have had a very definite aim in mind. Perhaps it was time for a little doubt. Perhaps it was time to look at Arnold Brothers Est 1905 in a different way. They were off to one side in the big underfloor area the stationery used for important meetings. It was the one place in the store, apart from the food hall, where fighting was strictly forbidden. The heads of the families, rulers of departments and sub-departments, were milling around out there. Getting them to even think of working together would be impossible without the stationery. It was odd, really. The stationery had no real power at all, but all the families needed them, and none of them feared them, and so they survived, and, in a strange sort of way, led. A haberdashery wouldn't listen even to common sense from an ironmongery on general principles. But they would if the speaker was a stationery, because everyone knew the stationery didn't take sides. Masklin turned to Gerda. "We need to talk to someone in the ironmongery. They control the electric, don't they? And the lorry nest." "That's the Count de Ironmongery over there," said Gerda, pointing. "Thin fellow, with the moustache." He looked sideways at Masklin. "You've got a plan, haven't you?" Yes, sort of. Masklin picked absently at the tip of his spear. "How many stationery can read human?" "All of us can read a bit, of course," said Gerda, "but only four of us are any real good at it, if you must know." "I don't think that's going to be enough," said Masklin. "Well, there's a trick to it, and not everyone can get the hang of it. What are you planning?" "A way to get everyone out." Gerda looked worried. "This isn't some mad scheme of Dorcas's, is it?" he said. "Nope." Masklin felt that he might explode. His head wasn't big enough to hold all the things the thing had told him, and he was the only one. Oh, the abbot had known and died with his eyes full of stars, but even he didn't understand. The store gnomes couldn't understand what the thing was saying because they had no experiences to draw on. To them, from one end of the store to the other was the biggest possible distance in the world. They wouldn't be able to get to grips with the fact that the stars, for instance, were much further away. Even if you ran all the way, it'd probably take weeks to reach them. The stars. And a long, long time ago, gnomes had travelled between them on things that made lorries look tiny and had been built by gnomes. And one of the great ships, exploring around a little star on the edge of nowhere, had sent out a smaller ship to land on the world of the humans. But something had gone wrong. Masklin hadn't understood that bit, except that the thing that moved the ships was very, very powerful. Hundreds of gnomes had survived, though. One of them, searching through the wreckage, had found the thing. It wasn't any good without electricity to eat, but the gnomes had kept it, nevertheless, because it had been the machine that steered the ship. and the generations had passed by, and the gnomes forgot everything except that the thing was very important. That was enough for one head to carry, Masklin thought. But it wasn't the most important bit. It wasn't the bit that made his blood fizz and his fingers tingle. This was the important bit. The big ship, the one that could fly between stars, was still up there somewhere. It was tended by machines like the thing, patiently waiting for the gnomes to come back. Time meant nothing to them. They'd wait until the sun went cold and the moon died, carefully repairing the ship and keeping it ready for the gnomes to come back, to take them home. He knew what he had to do. It was, of course, an impossible task, but he was used to them. The way to deal with an impossible task was to chop it down into a number of merely very difficult tasks and break each one of them into a group of horribly hard tasks and each one of them into tricky jobs and each one of them... Gerda was still watching him cautiously. Masklin said, "This plan..." "Yes?" "The abbot told me that the stationary have always tried to make gnomes work together and stop squabbling. That has always been our desire, yes? This plan will mean they'll have to work together." "Good." "Yes, we can," said Masklin, "if we steal a lorry." There was a dead silence. "The gnome's a fool," snapped the Duke de Haberdashery. "Even if the store was in danger, and I see no reason, I say, to believe it, the idea is quite preposterous." "You see," said Masklin, "there's plenty of room. We can take everyone. We can steal books that tell us how to do things. And I'm listening to no more of this nonsense," snapped the Duke. He turned and stormed out. Most of the other lords followed him. Those left were the Count de Ironmongery, a small fat woman who Gerda had identified as the Baroness del Icatessen, and a handful of lesser lords from the sub-departments. The Count looked around theatrically. "Ah," he said, "room to breathe. Carry on, young man." "Well, that's about it," Masklin admitted. "I can't plan anything more until I've found out more things. For example, can you make electric? Not steal it from the store, but make it." The Count stroked his chin. "You're asking me to give you departmental secrets?" "My lord," said Gerda sharply, "if we take this desperate step, it is vital that we are open with one another and share our knowledge." "Well said," said Masklin. "And that's why the stationery, for their part, will teach all gnomes who request it to read." There was a pause. It was broken by the faint wheezing noise of Gerda trying not to choke. "To read?" Masklin saw Grimmer staring at him. "Women too," he said. This time it was the Count who looked surprised. The Baroness, on the other hand, was smiling. "There's all kinds of books on the shelves in the stationery department," Masklin plunged on. "Anything we want to do, there's a book that tells us how. But we're going to need lots of people to read them." "I think our stationery friend would like a drink of water," observed the Count. "I think he may be overcome by the new spirit of sharing and cooperation." "Young man," said the Baroness, "what you say might be true. But do these precious books tell us how one may control one of these lorry things?" Masklin nodded. Grimmer came up behind him, dragging a thin book that was nearly as big as she was. Masklin helped her prop it up so they could all see it. "See, it's got words on it," he said proudly. "I've learnt them already. They say..." He pointed each one out with his spear as he said them. "The... high... way... code. Highway code. It's got pictures inside. When you learn the highway code, you can drive. It says so." "And I've been working out what some of the words mean," said Grimmer. "And that is all there is to it?" said the Count. What was it the abbot had said? The important thing about being a leader was not so much being right or wrong as being certain. Being right helped, of course. Masklin took a deep breath. "It can't be very difficult. Otherwise humans wouldn't be able to do it." The gnomes had to concede this. "Most intriguing," said the Count. "May I ask what it is you require from us now?" "People," said Masklin simply. "As many as you can spare, especially the ones you can't spare, and they'll need to be fed." The Baroness glanced at the Count. He nodded, so she nodded. "I'd just like to ask the young girl," she said, "whether she feels all right with this reading, I mean." "I can only do some words," said Grimmer quickly, "like left and right and bicycle." "And you haven't experienced any feelings of pressure in the head?" said the Baroness carefully. "Not really, ma'am." "That's extremely interesting," said the Baroness. 28 is not enough," said Grimmer. "It's a start," said Masklin. "I think there'll be more by and by. They all need to be taught to read, and then 5 of the best of them must be taught how to teach people to read. What about me?" "I want you to learn to read even more." "Why?" "Because we need to learn how to think," said Masklin. "I know how to think. There's some things we can't think because we don't know the words, like the store gnomes. They don't even know what the wind and rain are really like." "I know, and I tried to tell the Baroness about snow and..." Masklin nodded. "There you are, then. They don't know, and they don't even know they don't know. What is it that we don't know? We ought to read everything that we can. Gerda doesn't like it. He says only the stationery should read. But the trouble is, they don't try to understand things." Gerda had been furious. "Reading," he said. "Every stupid gnome coming up here and wearing all the printing out with looking at it. Why don't you give away all our skills while you're about it? Why don't we teach everyone to write, eh?" "We can do that later," said Masklin. "What?" "It isn't so important, you see." Gerda thumped the wall. "Why in the name of Arnold Brothers S. 1905 didn't you ask my permission first?"
"Would you have given it?"
"No!"
"That's why, you see," said Masklin.
"When I said I'd help you, I didn't expect this," shouted Gerda.
"Nor did I," snapped Masklin. The new abbot paused.
"What do you mean?"
"I thought you'd help," said Masklin simply. Gerda sagged.
All right, do whatever is necessary, take whatever people you must."
"Good," said Masklin. "When can you start?"
"Me? But you said yourself that you're the best reader." "What do you want me to do?"
"How many books are there?" said Masklin.
"Hundreds. Thousands."
"Do you know what they're all about?"
"They're about everything. You'd never believe it. They're full of words even I don't understand."
"Can you find a book which tells you how to understand words you don't understand?" said Masklin. Gerda hesitated.
"It's an intriguing thought."
"And then I want you to find a book about... well, is there a book that tells you how gnomes can drive a lorry built for humans?"
"Don't you know?"
"Not exactly. I was sort of hoping we could work it out as we went along."
"But you said all we needed to do was learn the highway code."
"Yes," said Masklin uncertainly, "and it says you have to know the highway code before you can drive, but somehow I get the feeling that it might not be as simple as that."
"Barkins galore preserve us."
"I hope so," said Masklin. "I really do."
And then it was time to put it all to the test. It was cold in the lorry nest. It was also a long way to the ground if they fell off the girder. Masklin tried not to look down. There was a lorry below them, huge, red and terrible in the gloom. "This is about far enough," he said. "We're right over the sticking out bit where the driver sits."
"The cab," said Angelo.
Angelo had been a surprise. He'd turned up in the stationery department, breathing heavily, his face red and demanding to be taught to read, so he could learn about lorries. They fascinated him.
"But your father objects to the whole idea," Masklin had said.
"That doesn't matter," said Angelo shortly. "I want to go outside. I want to know if it's real." Now, Angelo probably knew more about lorries than any other gnome, which wasn't a lot, Masklin had to admit.
He listened to Angelo muttering to himself as he struggled into the straps.
Gear, he said. Shift, steering wheel, wipers, auto transmission, breaker brake, good buddy, smoky, double egg and chips and beans, Yorkie bar, truckers.
He looked up and smiled thinly at Masklin.
Ready, he said.
Now, remember, said Masklin, they don't always leave the windows open, so if they're closed, one pull on the rope and we'll pull you back up, okay?
10-4.
What?
It's lorry driver for yes, explained Angelo.
Oh, fine. Have you got your sandwiches? Angelo patted the package at his waist.
And my notebook, he said.
Ready to go. Put the pedal to the metal.
What? It means go in lorry.
Angelo eased himself over the edge and slowly became a small spinning shape in the gloom as the team carefully let the thread out. Then he was down and hurrying across the sloping roof to the side of the cab. It made Masklin dizzy just to look down at him. The figure disappeared. After a while came two tugs, meaning pay out more thread, and then there were three tugs. Faint, but, well, three. And a few seconds later, they came again. Angelo has landed, Masklin said. He looked down at the lorry.
Where would it go? What would happen to it? What would Angelo see before he came back again?
If he didn't come back, what would Masklin tell his parents? That someone had to go? That he'd begged to go? That they had to see how a lorry was driven? That everything depended on him? Somehow, he knew it wouldn't sound very convincing in those circumstances. 2 days went past. The gnomes kept watch from the girder over the garage. A small plastic telescope was rolled down from the toy department, and with its help, the news came back that the big metal doors to the garage opened themselves when a human pressed a red button next to them.
How could you press a button 10 times higher than your head?
It went down on Masklin's list of problems to solve. Gerda had found a map. It was in quite a small book. It's called... He read the gold lettering slowly.
Pocket Diary. And it has this map all at the back. Look.
Masklin stared down at the small pages of blue and red blobs. Some of the blobs had names, like Africa and Asia. Well, he said, and... Yes, I suppose so. Well done. Where are we exactly?
In the middle, said Gerda promptly. That's logical.
And then the lorry returned. Angelo didn't. Masklin ran along the girder without thinking of the drop on either side. The little knot of figures told him everything he didn't want to know. A young gnome who had just been lowered over the edge was sitting down and getting his breath back.
I tried all the windows, he said. They're all shut. Couldn't see anyone in there. It's very dark.
Are you sure it's the right lorry? Said Masklin to the head watcher.
They've all got numbers on the front of them, he was told. I was particularly sure to remember the one he went out on, so when he come back this afternoon, I... We've got to get inside to have a look, said Masklin firmly. Someone go and get...
No, it'll take too long. Lower me down.
What?
Lower me down, Masklin repeated, all the way to the floor.
It's a long way down, said one of them.
I know. Far too long to go all the way around by the stairs. Masklin handed the end of the thread to a couple of gnomes. He could be in there hurt or something.
"'Tisn't our fault, said a gnome. There were humans all over the place when it come in. We had to wait.
Some of you, go around the long way and meet me down there. Don't look so upset. It's no one's fault. Except perhaps mine, he thought, as he spun around in the darkness. He watched the huge shadowy bulk of the lorry slide past him. The floor was greasy with oil. He ran under the lorry into a world roofed with wires and pipes, far too high to reach. But he poked around near one of the benches and came back dragging a length of wire and with great difficulty bent it into a hook at one end. A moment later, he was crawling along the pipes underneath the lorry, and after a minute or two, he found a metal wall ahead of him with holes in it to take bundles of wires. It was possible, with a certain amount of pain... to squeeze through. Inside. There was a carpet. Here and there, a sweet wrapper lay, large as a newspaper to a gnome.
Huge pedal-shaped things stuck out of greasy holes in the floor. In the distance was a seat behind a huge wheel. "Angelo?" he called out softly. There was no answer. He poked around for a while and had nearly given up when he spotted something in the drifts of fluff and paper under the seat. Masklin recognised Angelo's coat. He took the coat back out with him. A dozen gnomes were waiting anxiously on the oil-soaked floor under the engine. Masklin held out the coat and shrugged. "He's been there, but he's not there now." The gnomes weren't looking at him, but past him, at something behind him. The Duke de Haberdashery was standing there with some of his soldiers. He stared at Masklin and then held out his hands without saying a word. Masklin gave him the coat. The Duke turned it over and over, staring at it. The silence stretched out thinner and thinner until it almost hummed. "I forbade him to go," said the Duke softly. "I told him it would be dangerous." He looked up at Masklin. "Is my son still alive?" "He could be. There's no reason why not." The Duke stared up at the lorry. "And these things go outside, do they?" "Oh, yes, all the time," said Masklin. "There is nothing outside," the Duke said. "I know this, but my son knew differently. You think we should go out? Will I see my son then?" Masklin looked into the old man's eyes. "It's possible," he said. "It was possible." "Very well," said the Duke. "What do you need?" "What?" said Masklin, his mouth dropping open. "I said, what do you need to make the lorry go outside?" Masklin floundered. "At the moment, I suppose we need people." "How many?" snapped the Duke. Masklin's mind raced. 50? "You shall have them." On the fourth day, Angelo returned, wild-eyed and grinning like a maniac. The gnome on guard came running into the department with Angelo swaggering behind him and a gaggle of younger gnomes trailing fascinated in his wake. He was grimy and ragged, but he walked proudly with a strange swaying motion, like a gnome who has boldly gone where no gnome has gone before and can't wait to be asked about it. "Where have I been? Where have I been? Where haven't I been? More like you should see what's out there." "What?" "Everywhere," he said, his eyes glowing. "And you know what? What? I've seen the store from the outside. It's beautiful." He fumbled in his pouch for his notebook, which was now a lot fatter, and thumbed through the pages. "It's got a great big sign outside it, and I copied it down because it's not trucker language and I didn't understand it. But this is what it was." He held it up. The word said, "Closing down sale." Then he went to bed, still babbling excitedly, and slept for 2 hours. Later on, Masklin went to see him. Angelo was sitting up in bed, his eyes shining like bright marbles in the paleness of his face. "Don't you get him tired," warned Granny Morky, who always nursed anyone too ill to prevent it. "He's very weak and feverish. It's all that rattling around in those great noisy things. It's not natural. We've just had his dad here, and I had to turf him out after 5 minutes." Masklin sat down by the bed while Angelo talked with wild enthusiasm about the world outside, like someone who had spent his life with a blindfold on and had just been allowed to see. He talked about the big light in the sky and roads full of lorries and big things sticking out of the floor which had green things all over them. "Trees," said Masklin, "and great buildings where things went on the lorry or came off it. It was at one of these that Angelo got lost. He'd climbed out when it stopped for a while to go to the lavatory and hadn't been able to get back before the driver returned and drove away. So he'd climbed onto another one, and sometime after it had driven away, it stopped at a big park with other lorries in it. He started looking for another Arnold Brothers S1905 lorry." "It must have been a cafe on a motorway," said Masklin. "We used to live near one." "Oh, is that what it's called?" said Angelo, hardly listening. "There weren't any store lorries. Or perhaps there were, but there were so many other types he couldn't find one. Eventually, he'd camped out on the edge of a lorry park, living on scraps, until by sheer luck one had turned up. He hadn't been able to get into the cab, but he had managed to climb up a tyre and find a dark place where he had to hold onto cables with his hands and knees to stop himself falling off onto the rushing road far below. Angelo produced his notebook. "Nearly lost it," he said. "Nearly ate it once, I was so hungry."
"Yes, but the actual driving," Masklin said. "How do they do the actual driving?"
Angelo flicked through the book. "I made a note somewhere," he said. "Here." He passed it over. Masklin looked at a complicated sketch of levers and arrows and numbers. "Turn the key, 1, 2. Press the red button, 1, 2. Push pedal number 1 down with the left foot. Push big lever left and up, 1, 2. Let pedal 1 up gently. Push pedal number 2 down." He gave up.
"What does it all mean?"
"It's how you drive a lorry," said Angelo. Angelo had been very thorough. Once, when he'd been alone in the cab, he'd measured the height of what he called the gear lever, which seemed very important. It was 5 times the height of a gnome. And the big wheel that moved and seemed to be very important was as wide as 8 gnomes standing side by side. "I did well, didn't I?" said Angelo. "It's all in there." Yeah, you did very well. Only you don't look very pleased. You've given me a lot to think about, I'm sure." Angelo grabbed him by the sleeve.
"They said there was only 1 store, he said urgently. "There isn't. There's so much outside, so much. There's other stores. I saw some. There could be gnomes living in them. Life in other stores."
"Of course, you know." "You get some more sleep," said Masklin, as kindly as he could manage.
"When are we going to go?"
There's plenty of time," said Masklin. "Don't worry about it. Get some sleep."
"I just never thought it would be as hard as this," Masklin wailed.
"You mean you didn't have any idea how we can drive one?" said Gerda.
"None at all," said Grimmer. I suppose I thought the lorries sort of went where you wanted," said Masklin. "I thought if they did it for humans, they'd do it for us. I didn't expect all this go, 1, 2, pull stuff. Those wheels and pedals are huge. I've seen them."
After closing time that evening, several dozen small and stealthy figures crept across the garage floor and disappeared under one of the parked lorries. Anyone listening would have heard the occasional tiny clink, thud, or swear word. After 10 minutes, they were in the cab. They stood in wonder, looking around. Masklin wandered over to one of the pedals, which was taller than he was, and gave it an experimental push. It didn't so much as wobble. Several of the others came over and helped, and managed to get it to move a little. One gnome stood and watched them thoughtfully. It was Dorcas, wearing a belt from which hung a variety of homemade tools, and he was idly twiddling the pencil lead that was kept permanently behind one ear when it wasn't being used. Masklin walked back to him. "What do you think?" he said. Dorcas rubbed his nose.
"It's all down to pulleys and levers. Amazing things, levers. Give me a lever long enough and a firm enough place to stand, and I could move the store.
Just one of these pedals would be enough for now."
Dorcas nodded. "We'll give it a try. All right, lads, bring it up."
A length of wood was gnome-handled into the cab. Dorcas ambled around, measuring distances with a piece of thread, and finally had them wedge one end into a crack in the metal floor. 4 gnomes lined up at the other end and hauled the wood across until it was resting on the lever.
"Right, lads," said Dorcas again. They pushed down. The pedal went all the way to the floor. There was a ragged cheer. "How did you do that?" said Masklin.
"That's levers for you."
"Okay."
He looked around, scratching his chin. "So we'll need 3 levers. He looked up at the great circle of the steering wheel. "You have any ideas about that?" he said.
"I thought ropes," said Masklin.
"How do you mean?"
"It's got these spokes in it, so if we tie ropes to them and have teams of gnomes on the ropes, they could pull it one way or the other, and that'll make the lorry go the way we want," said Masklin.
Dorcas squinted at the wheel. He paced the floor. He looked up. He looked down. His lips moved as he worked things out.
They won't see where they're going, he said finally.
I thought someone could stand right up there by the big window in the front and sort of tell them what to do, said Maslin.
They're powerful, noisy things, young Angelo said Dorcas. He scratched his chin again. I reckon I can do something about that. Then there's this big lever here, the gear lever, said Maslin. Ah, ropes again?
I thought so, said Maslin earnestly. What do you think?
Dorcas sucked in his breath.
Well, what with teams pulling the wheel and teams shifting the gear lever and people working the pedals with levers and someone up there telling them all what to do, it's going to take a powerful lot of practicing. Suppose I rig up all the tackle, all the ropes and such. How many nights will we have to practice?
Including the night we leave?
Yeah.
One, said Masklin. Dorcas sniffed. He stared upwards for a while, humming under his breath. It's impossible.
We'll only have one chance, you see, said Masklin.
And, said Dorcas, have you thought again about how you're going to get everyone on? 2,000 gnomes, mind, plus all this stuff we're taking. You can't have old grannies and little babbies shinning up ropes or crawling through holes, can you?
Have you got any ideas, Masklin said. I really would appreciate your help.
Dorcas gave him a long, thoughtful look and then patted him on the shoulder. Maybe there's a way we can practice and solve the other problem. You come down here again tomorrow night and we'll see, shall we?
Masklin went back to the old shoebox in the stationery department where he'd taken to sleeping. He woke up an hour later. The terror had started. It started with silence when there should have been noise. All the gnomes were used to the distant thumping and murmuring of the humans during the long daylight hours. Now it was gone, they could hear the strange, oppressive silence, and one or two of the braver or more inquisitive ones risked a quick glance above floor level. Emptiness stretched away between the familiar counters, and there didn't seem to be much stock around.
It's always like this after a sale, they said. And then, before you know where you are, all the shelves are filled up again. Nothing to get upset about at all. It's all part of Arnold Brothers S1905's great plan.
And they sat in silence, or hummed a little tune, or found something to occupy their minds to stop thinking unpleasant thoughts. It didn't work. And then, when the humans came in and started taking the few things that were left off the shelves and counters and piling them in great boxes and taking them down to the garage and loading them onto the lorries and started taking up the floorboards.
Get up quickly, said Gerda.
What's happening? Said Masklin, yawning. Humans are taking the store to bits.
Masklin sat bolt upright.
They can't be. It's not time.
They're doing it just the same.
Masklin jigged sideways across the floor, one leg out of his trousers, and thumped the thing.
Hey, you said the demolition wasn't for ages yet.
14 days, said the thing.
It's starting now.
This is probably the removal of remaining stock to new premises and preliminary works, said the thing.
Oh, good. That should make everyone feel a lot better. Why didn't you tell us?
I was not aware you did not know.
Well, we didn't. So what do you suggest we do now?
Leave as soon as possible.
Masklin went out in the milling, disorganised crowd. Fortunately, the boards hadn't been taken up in an inhabited area. Some of the more sensible refugees said that only a few had been taken up in the far end of the gardening department so the humans could get at the water pipes. But gnomes living nearby were taking no chances. There was a thump overhead. A few minutes later, a breathless gnome arrived and reported that the carpets were being rolled up and taken away. That caused a terrified silence. Masklin realised that they were all looking at him. He said. Then he said, I think everyone ought to get as much food as they can carry and go down to the basement near to the garage.
You mean you still think we should do it?
Said Gerda. We haven't much choice, have we?
But we were... You said we should take as much as we could from the store, all the wire and tools and things and books, said Gerda.
We'll be lucky if we can just take ourselves. There's no time.
Another messenger came running up. It was one of Dorcas's group. He whispered something to Masklin, who gave a strange smile.
"Can it be that Arnold Brothers Est 1905 has abandoned us in our hour of need?"
said Gerda. "I don't think so. He may be helping us," said Masklin. "Because, well, you'll never guess where the humans are putting all this stuff." Half an hour later, Masklin lay on the girder with Dorcas, looking down at the garage. Dorcas passed him the telescope. "Busy little things, aren't they? Been at it all morning, they have. A couple of lorries have already gone out and come back, so they can't be going very far." "The letter we saw said something about a new store," said Masklin. "Perhaps they're taking the stuff there." As Masklin watched, the big roller door creaked upwards, and a lorry nearby started with a roar and ground slowly out into the blinding daylight. "What we need," he said, "is a lorry with a lot of stuff from the ironmongery department. Wire, you know, and tools and things." "What'll I do," said Dorcas slowly, "if they load it all up on a lorry and drive it away? They're working powerful fast for humans. You'll have to stop the lorry from leaving," said Masklin. Refugees were flowing into the ironmongery department from all over the store, filling all the space under the floor with a frightened buzz of whispered conversation. Many of them looked up as Masklin walked past, and what he saw in their faces terrified him. "They believe I can help," he thought. "They're looking at me as if I'm their only hope." He forced himself to look brimful of confidence. The news was bad from everywhere. A lot of the gardening departments had been cleared. Most of the clothes departments were empty. The counters were being ripped out of cosmetics, although fortunately not too many gnomes lived there. Masklin could hear, even hear, the thud and crunch of the work going on. He went back down to the garage, where Dorcas was still watching from his spy post on top of the girder. The old gnome pointed to the lorry immediately below them. "That's the one we want. It's got all sorts in it. Lots of stuff from the do-it-yourself department. There's even some haberdashery things, needles and whatnot. All the stuff you told me to look out for." "We've got to stop them driving it out," said Masklin. Dorcas grinned. "The machinery that raises the door won't work. The fuse has gone." "What's a fuse?" said Masklin. Dorcas picked up a long, thick red bar lying by his feet. "This is." "You took it?" "Tricky job. We had to tie a bit of string around it. Made a powerful big spark when we pulled it out." "But I expect they can put another one in," said Masklin. "Oh, they did. Didn't work, though. Because after we took the fuse out, the lads went and cut the wires inside the wall in a couple of places. Very dangerous, but it'll take the humans forever to find it." "But supposing they lever the door up? Won't do them any good. It's not as if the lorry will go, anyway." "Why not?" Dorcas pointed downwards. Masklin watched, and after a moment he saw a couple of small figures scurry out from under the lorry and dive into the shadows by the wall. They were carrying a pair of pliers. A moment later, a solitary figure hurried after them, dragging a length of wire. "Powerful lot of wires them lorries need," said Dorcas. "This one ain't got so much now. Funny, innit? Take away a tiny spark and the lorry won't go. Don't worry, though. I reckon we'll know where to put it all back later." There was a clang below. One of the humans had given the door a kick. "Temper, temper," said Dorcas mildly. "You've thought of just about everything," said Masklin. "I hope so. But we'd better make sure, hadn't we?" He stood up and produced a white flag, which he waved over his head. There was an answering flicker of white from the shadows on the far side of the garage. And then the lights went out. There was a rumble of annoyance from the humans below, and then a jangling noise as one of them walked into something. After some grunting and a few more thuds, one of the humans found a doorway out into the basement, and the rest of them followed it. "Don't you think they'll suspect something?" said Masklin. "There's other humans working in the store. They'll probably think they caused it," said Dorcas. Masklin finished putting his possessions, such as they were, in a bag. "When we leave," he said, "you won't be able to talk, will you? You need electricity to drink."
"This is the case, yes,"
said the thing. "Can't you tell us which way we should go?"
"No. However, I detect radio traffic indicative of airline activity to the north of here."
That's good, is it?
It means there are flying machines.
And we can fly all the way home, said Masklin.
No, but that may be the next step. It may be possible to communicate with the starship, but first you must ride the lorry.
After that, I should think anything's possible, said Masklin gloomily. He looked expectantly at the thing, and then noticed with horror that its lights were going off, one by one.
Thing! When you are successful, we will talk again.
But you're supposed to help us, said Masklin.
I suggest you consider deeply the proper meaning of the word help, said the box. Either you are intelligent gnomes or just clever animals. It's up to you to find out which.
What? The last light went off.
Thing!
The light stayed off. The little black box contrived to look extremely dead and silent.
But I relied on you to help us sort out the driving and everything. You're just going to leave me like this?
If anything, the box got darker. Masklin stared at it. The cardboard door swung aside and Grimmer stepped in. She looked from the darkened thing to Masklin.
They're asking for you out there, she said quietly. Why is the thing all dark?
It just said goodbye. It said it won't help any more, Masklin wailed. It just said we have to prove we can do things for ourselves and it'll speak to us when we're successful. What shall I do?
I know what I could do, he thought. I could do with a bit of understanding. I could do with a bit of sympathy. Good old Grimmer, you can rely on her.
What you'll do, she said sharply, is jolly well stop moping and get up and go out there and get things organised.
What?
Sort things out, make new plans, give people orders. Get on with it. But do it now, she snapped.
Masklin stood up.
You shouldn't talk to me like that, he said plaintively. I'm the leader, you know.
Of course you're the leader, she said. Did I say you weren't the leader? Everyone knows you're the leader. Now get out there and lead and learn to listen. The thing's a machine, right? And machines mean what they say. It said when we're successful. It could have said if.